Blog Talk Radio.
The theme song for the Talk Geek with Tyler Brook podcast. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this in Los Angeles. 347-205-9631. There's 101 strong. We'll get to you guys. Hold tight as I lay this thing down here momentarily. If you missed this show, catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, it's more of him, less of me. As I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, and hand off the mic, first of all, Tyler the Threes. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And another great guest you're bringing in here today.
All these things are true. I am doing well, Mark. Thank you for asking. We got another wonderful guest, and if you want to get hold of me, feel free to reach out to me on either Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or email at tylerbrook111@gmail.com, or just feel free to call into the station like y'all always do. As for the guest, David Matthew Barnes. David, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Before we get this ball rolling any further, do you want to tell the audience about who you are, what you do, and where people can find you?
Oh, absolutely. I am an author, playwright, poet, screenwriter, and a frequent movie reviewer. I work with a wonderful movie review company called Phil Tinsel and write film reviews for them weekly, which is a very love of movies between writing movies and talking about movies and sharing my thoughts on movies. My life is very cinematic, as they say. And I'm on social media, too. As you know, Tyler, we're social media friends there. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and TikTok, even. So people can find me everywhere. I also have a website, too.
Terrific, terrific. A couple of things we want to mention before we talk about the topic of tonight's episode. First, our sponsors, can't English today. Our sponsors are Exaspace, who will be making a good portion of my merchandise. And if you still haven't done your Christmas shopping, feel free to go to the Geek Talk with Tyler website and buy plenty of my merch from there. And Star Candles, courtesy of Pamela, who half of all proceeds will go to women who have been abused or struggling single mothers. I recommend the Lemongrass, the official scent of Geek Talk with Tyler. And this is a very special dedication. This episode is dedicated to every single person that needs to buy Christmas stuff in October. Seriously, I just want to enjoy my Halloween, my birthday, and Thanksgiving before I even remotely think about Christmas. With that said, yes, we're going to be talking about the horror films of 2022. David, you brought this idea to me. Are there any horror films you personally enjoyed this year?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to tell you, one of the ones I saw just recently, which just came out, was The Menu, which is actually a horror comedy, like a very dark horror comedy. And it's an exceptional film in many, many ways. So, yeah, it was a terrific, extraordinary year for horror films at the box office and everywhere. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here to talk about it.
I'm sorry, are you saying a horror comedy?
Yeah, it's a horror comedy. I know, right? It's kind of a nice,
that kind of sounds like an oxymoron. Horror's supposed to be hardcore and serious, and comedy's more of a levity thing. That's kind of like the equivalent of asking for kosher pork chops.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the one thing I just loved about The Menu is it felt like such a throwback to, like, you know, the Greek tragedies, Greek comedies, the Feria, intense, sort of over the top a little bit in terms of commentary and so forth. And it really reminded me of that in a really artistic way. And so it did bring that comedy element in, very dark comedy, as I said before, but also, you know, pretty frightening film too. So it was a really good mix up of hybrids in cinema, and it's doing great things still at the box office. So it's a great film.
All right. What's the concept of this movie exactly?
Well, The Menu is about it's about a group of very privileged elite people from different parts of the different of world. One is a very feared and revered food critic for a high-end publication. One guy is sort of a washed-up movie star still trying to hang on to some glory. But the female lead, Anya Taylor-Joy, is the date of a man. And they all end up on an island together by invitation to attend a very secluded, isolated island that's only accessible by boat. They can't get on or off it without a ship, and which, you know, right away sets the tone for a horror movie. And they are treated to a multiple-course meal by a very, I don't know if I want to use the word sadistic, but pretty cruel, mean chef.
Well, was he sadistic?
Say that one more time.
Well, was he sadistic?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's okay to use the word if it's accurate.
I think he was more maybe maniacal, because it was a lot of strategy on his part. But the guests realized that they've really been brought there to be murdered. And I don't want to give too much of the film away because it's still in the theaters, but it's very well done, and it's some of the best cinematography and editing and beautiful score. And the performances are just top-notch, and the script is pretty stellar, too, so highly recommend it. But it's part of, you know, the very powerful year that horror movies have had. It has been a great year, a banner year for horror movies in 2022. I just want to share some numbers with you just to kind of give everybody a sense of the power of the horror film. And I say this, of course, as somebody who writes horror movies, but $650 million at the box, 70 million people in 2022 went to the theaters to see horror movies. So it was a really good year lucratively and in terms of attendance and everything, and some really standout films too this year.
Yeah, you see, you say that relates to a Greek tragedy, but it kind of feels more like The Dangerous Game, if you ask me.
Definitely there is elements of that as well too. I mean, that's certainly, you know, that hidden reason behind an invitation kind of thing, bringing people together for specific reasons. They don't know what that reason is, but it's revealed to them, is definitely part of the film.
All right, awesome. We actually have a couple of comments here, so we're going to address those. Fran,
sure.
From Chelmsford, Massachusetts. I like your theme song. Who sings that listening live in my backyard?
Oh, that's a great question. It's Mike Oldfield. It's the theme from The Exorcist, you know, appropriately enough for a conversation about horror movies. But that particular version is done by a wonderful group out of New York called Book of Love. They came out in the late 80s, and I think that version might be from the late 80s or the 90s. I'm not sure, but they took the song and completely redid it in a really cool, like, new wave dance kind of way, and it's a great track.
You mean kind of like what Marilyn Manson did for that Halloween song for, it's going to kill me now, Nightmare Before Christmas?
Oh, yeah, kind of a little bit, for sure. I think this, I know we didn't get to hear the whole song, but the whole song is worth a listen, for sure, and the arrangement on it is just really awesome. Well done, John. It's one of my favorites, for sure. Definitely gets you in the mood to watch a good horror movie.
Interesting. We also have another one. Billy from, I apologize if I butcher this, Nashua from New Hampshire. Great guest. David is very informative. I try not to miss your shows. Tyler, they are dope. Well, thank you, Billy. I appreciate that.
That's
and
great.
We
thank
have
you.
Two more coming up. Denise from San Francisco. Hi, Tyler. Really refreshing to hear your show after a long day at work. I am on the metro. Yeah, I do not miss having a job that requires me to go on the train.
yeah,
but thank you much for listening to me. And Gary from Sugar Land, Texas. Just was wondering when Comic-Con comes out this way. Interesting.
I don't know.
I think they have.
Texas,
I think the real
yeah.
two major Comic Cons are both in New York and San Diego. Granted, each convention is in its own state, but I'm not sure if it's like an official Comic Con. But I tell you what, Gary, because I like you, I'm gonna figure that out for you. But in the meantime, who's in the menu?
Well, it's an all-star cast. I mentioned Anya Taylor-Joy, who, if you've not seen her, also in The Queen's Gambit. She was also in another great film. It's sort of similar, I got to tell you, a few years back called Thoroughbreds. So if you like Anya Taylor-Joy in The Menu, I definitely recommend Thoroughbreds. It's an older, couple years older independent film with Olivia Cooke as her co-star, very diabolical, great film. But Ralph Fiennes is in The Menu. He's our maniacal, sadistic chef. Nicholas Hoult, I think is how you say his last name. But I want to talk about Judith Light, who everybody might know from Who's the Boss and TV, and I mean, way, way long time ago. But some of the great work that she's done recently, too, in television especially. But it's really nice to see Judith Light, who is such a terrific actress, back on the big screen where she belongs. John Leguizamo does a great part in this as the washed-up movie star. He's a wonderful, wonderful layered performance in there. But Janet McTeer, who also is an actress, listeners might, if you like independent films, might remember her from Tumbleweeds in the late 90s, early 2000s. I think she was nominated for an Oscar for that. But she plays the sort of self-absorbed, really privileged food critic and gets her own sort of that. But again, all-star cast, really, really wonderful. Colin Stetson did the score for this particular film and did a really great job. And Peter Deming was a cinematographer. And I think anyone who sees it from a visual place will really appreciate how exquisite the film looks on the big screen. I recommend if you can see it on the big screen, it does feel like a big screen movie as opposed to watching it at home. But see it however you can.
Terrific. And Gary, I'm going to answer your question. As of now, there are three Comic-Cons that are happening your way. First is the Permian Basin Comic-Con, which is going to be happening from December 9th to December 11th. If this weekend is packed for you, then I guess you're going to have to wait until April, buddy, in which we have two more Texas conventions for you. We have the South Texas Comic-Con and the Central Texas Comic-Con, both of which are happening from April 28th to April 30th. The first is in McAllen, and the other is in Waco. Now, I'm not a Texas native, as you can tell by my lovely New York accent, so I hope that definitely helps you out. But I'm going to ask you something for a second, Dave. What do you think makes a good horror film?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, I have to go back to some of the older classics. One of my favorite films ever in the horror genre is the original Halloween from John Carpenter from the late 70s. And the reason why I love that, and it still holds true for me, for sort of the criteria for, to answer your question, what makes a great horror film, simplicity. I thought the concept of the original Halloween, like most successful horror films, is very simple. You know, babysitter meets, you know, the evil boogeyman and has to protect the kids she's watching. It very simple concept. And one of the interesting things about Halloween, and even going all the way back to Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, is if you look at the film Halloween, there's very little bloodshed. It's all sort of implied. A lot of it happens off screen, but the effect is still terrifying, and it still holds up well and chills audiences today when they watch it. So for me, what I look for in a great horror film is some sort of an original story. You know, so much of it has been done and said, and if for my fellow screenwriters out there, I think what we're taught in screenwriting school, screenwriting classes, if you're going to do something that's already been done, do it in a different way. And those are the films that I look for a lot, is the film that does something in a different way. And then we certainly have those this year. You know, I think movies like The Invitation certainly changed the genre up a little bit. The Black Phone was another one that was almost more of a thriller than a horror film, but was marketed as a horror film. So, and X and Pearl and that entire film franchise that's coming up, sort of came out of nowhere from A24, has just really shifted the horror genre in a really clever, unique way, and it's just making way for some really compelling stories. So, you know, I look for simple concepts, terrifying moments, the psychological aspect of horror films has got to be there, but you just like a good scare, you know, a good jump scare that, that you remember for years ago. I don't know, Tyler, if you ever saw the original Poltergeist, but I always hold the evil toy clown that comes up from underneath the bed. I don't know if you know the film, but it's one of the most ultimate jump scares in horror cinema. And, you know, if a film's got that level of a jump scare in it, I'm there. So.
Recently, no. Once Upon a Time, yes. And we're going to take this time for David. Can I get a drum roll, please?
Sure. I don't have a drum, but imagine a drum roll happening right now.
All right, I'll take it.
All right.
Trivia question time. What is the highest grossing film of 2022? For those of you that didn't catch it, what is the highest grossing film of 2022? If you know the answer, feel free to reach out to my moderator, Mark. And if you win, we will give you an official Star Candle candle. Now, I say the movie I would say really scared me the most was The Shining. Would you consider The Shining to be a horror film?
Oh, absolutely. I watch it every year on Halloween. The Shining is a great, great scary film. Now, if you're a purist and you read the original novel by Stephen King, you know, it's a very split audience, and some people really love The Shining. Some people hold the book to the higher regard. Dr. Sleep, I don't know if you've seen Dr. Sleep, Tyler, but that's a great sequel to The Shining.
I haven't seen it. It's on my queue.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I'm trying to catch
really
on a lot of different shows in anime because people tell me, oh, I need to see Robert Pattinson Batman. Oh, I need to see Chainsaw Man. Oh, you need to see Bleach, The Thousand-Year War. And I'm going to be honest, I've only seen two of those. Now, I honestly don't think I can see myself watching Robert Pattinson Batman. It's, oh, I'm a werewolf. Oh, wait, now I'm Batman. But sidetracking aside, yes, I will definitely add it to my queue. Let me ask you something, David. Is it like the new Christmas Story Christmas movie where they have the original cast but they're just older? Or is it just one of those different cast movies?
In which film? I'm sorry, I wasn't...
If memory serves, Dr. Sleep is the sequel to Shining, right?
Oh, Dr. Sleep, yeah, I believe it's an all-new cast. I don't remember anybody from the original Shining that appeared in Dr. Sleep, but it's a really great cast in Dr. Sleep, and sequels are hard, you know, they're really, really hard to do because you're constantly in the shadow of the original film that everybody already loved, because most movies don't get a sequel unless the first was tremendously successful, so, you know, they have the odds stacked against them from the beginning, but I feel like Dr. Sleep really persevered and really made it its own, you know, it's its own great film for many reasons, standalone aside from The Shining.
Well, as a purist, I did read The Shining, and I'm going to blow your mind for a second. You remember when the Scatman Carruthers character, I'm spacing on the name right now, died in the movie?
Yes.
He never actually died in the book.
I know. There are some significant differences between the book and the film version, for sure. And one of the interesting things about the casting for that, Shelley Duvall, who I just love in that performance, we all know Kubrick put through hell to make that movie, but Jack Nicholson, when he was cast in the role of Jack Torrance, he really wanted Jessica Lange, the actress, to be his wife, who's one of my favorite actors, but she wasn't able to do the film and later did The Postman Always Rings twice with Nicholson. But it's hard to imagine that film with anybody else in that role other than Shelley Duvall in the role of the wife and mother, because she was just so phenomenal in it. So, yeah, it's a really chilling film. And the behind the scenes, I don't know if you know too much about the behind the scenes of filming of The Shining, but it was quite a brutal production for everyone involved, especially for poor Shelley Duvall, because Kubrick was pretty tough on her.
I believe that.
Scene,
a lot of the times when someone really gets into role, they method act. Like, have you ever seen Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, of course.
Wrap your mind around this. Bradley Cooper actually went to a raccoon sanctuary just to get, in quote, in character for the role.
I've heard that about Bradley Cooper, that he's really immersive in his approach to performance. I'm not surprised by that, because I think that it sounds appropriate for his approach to a performance. But can you imagine doing that? I think I'd have to pass on. I love raccoons, though, but I don't know if I go that far.
Well, did you also know that Benedict Cumberbatch went into a reptile house to get into character for Smaug in the Hobbit series?
I couldn't do it myself because I'm not a fan of reptiles. But I mean, I love reptiles for the animals that they are. But for me, there's a little bit of creep factor there for sure. But kudos to Benedict for doing that, right?
I mean, that really separates the actors from the actors, air quote.
For sure, yeah. There's,
Jack Nicholson, for example, still scares me in that movie. And I'm in my 30s now. Whereas a lot of the time when you see these actors in these new movies, it feels like they're the adults on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Like they're acting,
well, yeah,
but are they really, though?
Yeah, I think that there's a difference between a film star, a movie star, and an actor. I think you can be one and the same, but I think an actor is usually somebody who's really studied their craft and their training, have done their training and so forth. Someone like Meryl Streep, obviously, who's the quintessential, you know, female actor in this country. But I get what you're saying too, for sure. There's certainly a difference. You can see it on the performance too, right? I mean, someone.
Well, yeah,
that
definitely can hold water for any of the reboots that come out. Like,
yeah,
the scene where the kids turn into donkey in the original
yeah.
Pinocchio movie, that scared me.
Yeah.
Whereas in the remake
right?
one,
I
it's
know,
like, just like, ugh. It's like you could tell it was being phoned in.
Right? Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm not a big fan of the reboots. I want to just, I think the original film should be untouchable, and we shouldn't bother them, because they're great
for reasons.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what we think, because no matter what happens, Disney's going to crap out the latest piece of crap, and it's still going to make them millions of dollars.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love Disney myself, so I can't go there with you. But,
if we're just going to get new Disney movies, here are a couple ideas. The Black Cauldron. Atlantis Lost
Empire.
Oh,
I love the Black Cauldron.
Treasure Planet.
Yeah, that's a,
boom.
Yeah, sure, yep.
Movies
those
that are clearly underrated that
films.
Deserve another chance at a revival.
The Sword in the Stone's another one that I think didn't get the...
Okay,
get
Sword
in
the Stone, yeah, boom. Another great example. But
yeah.
Can you really consider call a bunch of them really live action? I mean, the only
no,
way you can get
I
Lion King
yeah.
to be a live action movie is if you put peanut butter under a lion's mouth.
Yeah, from your words to Disney's ear.
Yeah, and we got another comment. Alan from Cranston, Rhode Island. Has anyone seen Tulsa King? Sylvester Stallone plays Heavy in OKC. Keep up the great work. Tyler, really enjoy your show. Good to be on. Well, first off, Alan, thank you. Second, no, I really haven't. Like I said, I'm really trying to catch up on a lot of stuff. I just finished this anime recently. It's called Sherlock Hound. Dave, are you a fan of the Ghibli movies?
I have not seen them, no.
Well, first off, you need to. Secondly,
yeah.
Before Studio Ghibli became a thing, Hayao Miyazaki actually worked on the series. It's called Sherlock Hound, and as the name suggests, it's Sherlock Holmes if he was a corgi, and pretty much every other person there is an anthropomorphic dog. So kind of, and in case you're wondering, more like a BoJack Horseman type of dog. It's just the
wow.
head, you get the head but no tail, no running on all fours. It's just them walking upright, but they just have a head of a dog. But they're still called dogs. So, take it with a grain of salt, but it's honestly pretty good. You can find the whole series on YouTube. And I recommend it, Dove, because it's one of those anime that has more of a Western feel to it, as opposed to pretty much anyone that has more of an Eastern feel. Like your Naruto's, your One Pieces, your Bleaches have more of an Eastern vibe to it. This one takes place in England. But I apologize, Dave, for getting sidetracked for the topic.
No, you're
yes,
fine.
Yes, it feels like a lot of the times horror. Do you ever consider horror to be a subjective genre?
Absolutely. And I think it gets a lot of unfair criticism and scrutiny that other genres don't always get. Not to say like I'm in defense of horror, but I'll defend horror as a genre forever because I think it's a legitimate, obviously, as the numbers I shared with you earlier, it's a, bona fide box office winners and shapes the overall year every year of cinema. I do. I think it gets an unfair rap, and I think that
it's one of those things where it's labeled horror, but it doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily scare you.
Yeah, well, horror is very subjective, too. I mean, and I think what scares some people doesn't scare somebody else. I think to that sense it is subjective for sure. But, I think that I don't, I think the criteria for what makes something, quote-unquote, horror is very flexible.
Or like what's intended to be horror. Like I'm on Netflix the other day. I wanted to watch something funny because I had a bad day at work. Don't want to get into details mm-hmm. about it. And mm-hmm. I'm trying to find, and I'm looking at the comedies, and I'm like, how the heck do half of these movies pass as comedies?
Hmm. Yeah, comedy is another hard genre because what's funny to one person is not funny to another person. So it's,
it's no doubt in my mind that Lord of the Rings is a fantasy film. It's no doubt in my mind that Star Wars is a sci-fi film. And it's no doubt in my mind that The Notebook is a romantic film.
Right,
I think horror and comedy are the two biggest subjective genres, not just for media, but just like all of any form of literature or movies, mm-hmm. television, anything, really.
Right. And I love the films that really mix up the genres, like going back to horror and sci-fi. I love Aliens and part of the Alien franchise. I love first two films, but that mixed sci-fi and horror together, and then we had that genre suddenly become a thing. So I like those, like going back to The Menu, I like horror comedy, and I like that mix up, that hybrid of genre, because I think it really, that's where the uniqueness comes through, is by mixing two things together in a really cool, clever way. did you see Halloween Ends?
No, I haven't, because I'm going to be honest, I'm really kind of tired of these reboots. I mean, as a businessman, I understand why they exist. You got to make money, and sometimes you got to sell out your integrity for a couple hundred mil. But as a viewer, it's just like, okay, we've seen another Batman. Another Spider-Man movie. Oh my gosh, this is like the 20th some odd Batman we've seen in the past 2 years. Obviously it's not that bad, but you get the concept of what I'm saying,
Sure. I the reason why I bring it up is it was a huge moneymaker for horror films this year, Halloween Ends. But I'm Halloween is my favorite horror genre and franchise, not genre. Favorite franchise, and a lot of people didn't like Halloween Ends. I think I'm in the minority because I there was aspects of it I really appreciated, but I was just wondering if you've seen it because it was such a sort of divisive film within the horror community this year. But I thought it was good stuff, honestly. So,
do you think I should see it?
If you like that franchise, I think you should. If you like the Michael Myers franchise, it's good stuff for sure.
All right, I'll definitely take it under consideration. And what streaming platforms can we find this on?
Halloween Ends, I think it's streaming right now on Peacock. I think it's still there on Peacock, but it might already be out on Blu-ray or DVD. I'm not quite sure, but I saw it on the big screen in the movie theaters.
All right, awesome. And we are at the 2-minute mark, so it's time to reveal that trivia question. The highest grossing film of 2022? Mile.
The highest grossing horror film of 2022 was Smile, which is correct, and which is a very creepy, fun film, Smile. I think it's still in the theaters, too. But the highest grossing non-horror film, interestingly enough, speaking of reboots, Tyler, was Top Gun Maverick, which made $1 gazillion in the box office. The highest grossing
film. Really? I thought it would have been Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. But hey, you know what? I've been wrong before.
But if anybody gives you either of those answers, I consider them a winner. So either Smile or Top Gun Maverick. So Smile was the number one grossing horror film of 2022, and Top Gun was the number one non-horror film grossing at the box office for 2022.
Oh, as a One Piece fan, I'm going to give Smile a try. So Dave, before I wrap this up, you want to tell everybody where you're found, et cetera, et cetera?
Yep, come check me out on my website at dmatthewb.com. There's two T's in Matthew, and I'm also on every social media platform you can imagine. Come say hello.
Terrific. Stay tuned next week as I have Patrick Cudler as we discuss the world of aliens. And let's not forget, everybody stay warm, everybody stay hydrated, everybody stay healthy, But let's not forget the most important thing if you're following this particular show. Stay geeky. And David, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be on this show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tyler. It's been a lot of fun.
Terrific. I hope we get to hear from you more. Take care now.